So a big meeting happened in Anchorage, Alaska between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. It was one of the most anticipated summits in recent years. People thought maybe something big would come out of it, like a step towards peace in Ukraine. The two leaders sat down for almost 3 hours, and when they finally came out to face the media, the atmosphere felt heavy, almost like everyone was waiting for a dramatic announcement. Trump stood in front of a banner that literally read, "Pursuing Peace," and what did he say? "We have made some headway." Then he quickly added, "There is no deal until there is a deal." That's it. No details, no answers to questions. Trump just walked away, ignoring reporters shouting at him. Now, when Trump says there is no deal until there is a deal, he's basically doing what he often does, keeping things vague and make media confused so that it sounds like progress has been made. In plain terms, he's signaling that talks happened and some understanding was reached, but nothing concrete, nothing signed on paper. Now, politically, it gives him room to look positive, but nothing is on paper, it is still in air. Now, for Putin, this was already a win. Remember, since the war started in 2022, he has been isolated from most world leaders. And here he was, sitting across the table with the US president. Symbolically, that meant a lot for him. Think about it. Western governments have spent 2 years trying to make Putin look like a global outcast, cutting him out of G7, limiting his presence in international forums, painting him as untouchable. But the moment he's seen publicly with the US president, that narrative cracks. It shows that he's not isolated. The so-called powerful country, that is the United States, still needs to talk to him. Now, if you look at Ukraine, Ukraine wants the world to focus on the battlefield, where Russia is seen as the aggressor. But this meeting in Alaska shifts the focus to diplomacy, where Putin shines. Always remember this point. Diplomacy blurs the line between aggressor and victim. Instead of headlines about Russia bombed another city, people will read, "Russia and the US are negotiating peace." This softens global anger. Also think about it. Europe has been strongly supporting Ukraine. But if the US president is shaking hands with Putin, it creates subtle doubt in Europe. If Washington is willing to talk, should we keep pushing hard sanctions forever? That tiny crack in Western unity is a huge win for Russia. Now, after the summit, Trump went on Fox News with Sean Hannity, and here he gave away a little more. He said that because of his progress with Putin, he will hold off on new tariffs against China, even though they are buying Russian oil. But at the same time, we all know that Trump slapped a 25% tariff on India, another big buyer of Russian crude. And he also said, "Because of what happened today, I don't have to think about that now, maybe in 2 or 3 weeks, but not right now." Interesting, right? Instead of hitting Russia, Trump is targeting India and threatening China. You know what does that mean? So just now I told you how this meeting is a huge win for Russia, right? Now don't assume the US President Trump and his administration is dumb. By meeting the Russian president in person, United States has also signaled a very important message. Trump has opened a line of communication with Putin. Now suppose Trump had slapped sanctions right after meeting Putin, Russia would have shut the door permanently. So instead, Trump outsourced the punishment to third parties like India and China, while sparing Russia to maintain leverage. Strategically, it's like saying, "I will pressure your buyers, not you. That way, you still need me." So on one hand, after being isolated for 2 years, Putin can now say that the big player still had to talk to him. In the similar way, even Trump has signaled, "I will not sanction you. I will pressure your buyers so that you still need me." Although Trump has signaled whatever he had to, but we all know both India and China who buy Russian oil, they handle US differently. China openly challenges the United States, and India balances. By targeting tariffs at India and threatening China, Trump is testing how much will you risk your US market access just to keep buying Russian oil. It's a pressure without directly confronting Russia. And also think about it. United States is trying to aim 2 targets with single bullet, actually 3. One is India, China. The third one is Europe. Europe is also watching closely. Even Europe is seeing that United States is sparing Russia for now, but punishing India. That's a signal to European countries. If you want cheaper energy, talk to me, not Moscow. It positions the United States as the middleman for global energy politics. Now the real question comes, why is Trump creating all these longer diplomatic hurdles? Tariffs on India, threats on China, pressure on Europe, instead of just sanctioning Russia directly? The answer lies in leverage. If Trump directly sanctions Russia, the United States loses its bargaining chip instantly. Russia will harden its position and Washington will have no room left to negotiate. But then by targeting Russia's buyers, instead of Russia itself, Trump keeps the Russia channel open. He's signaling to Putin, "I won't choke you directly, but I will squeeze the people who keep you alive economically." It's a clever chess move because here Trump is not only testing India's balancing game and China's defiance, but also shaping how Europe thinks about energy security. So instead of blunt sanction, he's using a pressure network, India-China-Europe, all tied back to Russia's oil. That way, Trump positions America not as the punisher, but as the middleman everyone eventually has to talk to. In simple words, sanctioning Russia is a short-term punishment. Pressuring its buyer is a long-term control. When the Fox News anchor Hannity asked Trump what advice he would give Zelensky, you know what Trump said, "Gotta make a deal. Look, Russia is a very big power, and they are not." That sentence, "Russia is a very big power," that says everything about why Trump is creating all these longer diplomatic hurdles instead of sanctioning Russia directly. And also, whether you have noticed this or not, when Trump and Putin greeted each other and headed towards the podium, the B-2 bomber flew over them. Well, there is no global rule or diplomatic protocol that says when two powerful leaders meet, bombers must fly overhead. Summits are usually meant to project calm, seriousness and diplomacy, not military muscle. When military aircraft, especially bombers or fighter jets, are visible during a summit, it is always an intentional signaling. It's not an accident. It is a show of strength, a way of saying we are talking peace, but don't forget my firepower. It creates a dramatic backdrop for media coverage and sends a reminder to the other side of the military reality. For the opponent, that is Putin, it's a subtle intimidation, a reminder of what's in my pocket. For the domestic audience, it reassures people back home that their leader is not bowing down, but meeting from a position of strength. For world media, those images of bombers and flags become iconic symbols, leaders negotiating under the shadow of hard power. If you notice Putin's reaction, he wasn't really surprised. He just gave the fake nod with a playful smirk. Inside, he was probably thinking, "On land that we sold it to you, you are trying to act like the boss in front of me." In the interview, Trump also hinted that maybe a meeting would be arranged between Putin and Ukrainian President Zelensky, possibly with Trump himself present, but he gave no timeline, no details, nothing concrete. And guess what? Even Putin never mentioned any Zelensky meeting at all. Instead, Putin kept repeating Moscow's old line that so-called root causes of the conflict must be solved before there can be peace. And what are those root causes? No NATO expansion towards Eastern Europe and no NATO membership for Ukraine. That basically means, from Russia's point of view, there will be no quick ceasefire. When Hannity asked Trump what advice he would give Zelensky, and when Trump said, "Gotta make a deal, look, Russia is a very big power, and they are not," you know that Trump is not just giving an advice, he's spelling out a power reality. He sees Ukraine not as an equal player, but as a smaller state, caught in the middle of a bigger geopolitical clash. Even many people on the internet has to accept this reality. You cannot equalize anything just like that. This modern liberal idea, whether in politics, economics or society, often pushes the belief that everyone can be treated as equal. Sounds noble, but in hard power politics, this collapses quickly. You can't make Ukraine equal to Russia by declarations. You can't make small economies equal to giant by wishful thinking. Without real capability, equality becomes symbolic, not functional. Equalizing everything depletes value out of everything. And economics doesn't survive without value. Economics needs differentiation of value. If everything is equal, then nothing has unique worth. At least not in this materialistic realm. Value comes from scarcity, strength, advantage. The same applies in geopolitics. Russia's energy reserves, US dollar dominance, China's manufacturing scale, they create value through imbalance. Trying to flatten everything into equal ignores how systems actually survive. This is why liberals' idea of equalization struggles. It promises fairness but often removes the very fundamentals that drive growth, competition and survival. In geopolitics, smaller states can't simply be equalized with bigger powers. They need alliances, leverage or unique strengths to survive. Otherwise, they get used as battleground like Ukraine. So Trump is telling Ukraine to accept reality and cut a deal, no matter how painful. And that's actually the truth. We have to accept the fact that Ukraine was a scapegoat. This war that was started in 2022 was a collective thought-out plan against Russia by using Ukraine as the ground. The big players have directly made their profits, squeezed what they could out of this war. And now the signals from Washington are clear. It's time to wrap it up and move on. It is all right there in plain sight. So that's all that happened in this meeting. And when both presidents departed, the contrast was striking. As the Russian plane rode onto the runway, even American soldiers couldn't resist snapping photos, caught in the fascination of its power. But when Air Force One prepared to leave, there was no such buzz. Soldiers leaned against their cars, casually chatting, barely paying attention. So that's a sort of a difference that you can see. I hope you found this video informative. I'll see you in the next one.